Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn four times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are four for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are $10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.
So that happened. The Cleveland Cavaliers lost Game 1, 113-91 of the NBA Finals against the Warriors. As always, this is Chris Manning, your host of the Locked On Cavs podcast, brought to you by Fear the Sword and part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, Cavs lose Game 1. Have a recap today up with Trevor Magnotti from Fear the Sword. I think you guys will enjoy that. We're going to have a mailbag up on Saturday. We'll have a preview show up as well to have some information ahead of Game 2, and you'll have a bunch of writing up at Fear the Sword as well, so check all of that out. But the Cavs lose. Tough game. Hard to say exactly what's going to happen from here and how they're going to adjust, but Game 2 to me is one of the most important games for the Cavs of the series. It's probably the one that's going to tell us the most about what's to come. And Trevor, I was kind of left to hop on and talk to me about it. Hope you guys enjoy. We'll talk to you again on Saturday. Gonna go every day pretty much now through now and the end of the finals to give you guys as much coverage as we can. And if you have any show suggestions or stuff you want to hear about or just any thoughts about the series, I will certainly read any comments you have during the mailbag. So drop those to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. Let me hear your thoughts about Game 1. But here's myself, Trevor Magnotti, recapping the Cavs' Game 1 loss to the Warriors.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So Trevor, Game 1, you know, obviously there's obvious things we can run through here. The turnovers to me are the big thing, just because when you have 20 turnovers as a team and LeBron James, your stabilizing, dominating force is the guy that has 8 of them, and 6 of them come in that second quarter, and the Warriors have a whopping 4. Golden State ends up getting 21 points off of turnovers in this game, I think 10 in the second quarter, and then they also get offensive rebounds. And the theme of this game to me is that the Cavs were giving Golden State extra opportunities when they could not afford to do that. And then Durant and Curry did Durant and Curry things. That's just going to doom you if you're the Cavs, who kind of, I think, need to be more perfect than Golden State does if they're going to win the finals.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the overarching theme from this whole game, was that the Cavs really kind of got away from the things that have worked for them in the past 2 years. They kind of struggled to kind of grind the game to a halt and really try to maximize possessions, take care of the ball, try to force turnovers on the defensive end, and you know, they were really kind of lackadaisical on the offensive end in particular. I really didn't feel like they did a really good job of exploiting mismatches and really trying to generate quality looks. It always felt like they were a little bit hesitant with what they were doing. There wasn't a lot of confidence, not a lot of ball flying around on the string, particularly I saw that coming from J.R. Smith and LeBron. I felt like Kyrie did a pretty good job of moving the ball when he needed to, attacking when he needed to, and kind of understanding the sense of the moment. But I really felt like the Cavs' other starters didn't have that same benefit, and that's kind of what led to the turnover margin. I think that the turnovers are a problem, but again, if you can force more than four, 20 doesn't seem as bad. I think that the four turnovers for Golden State is the much, much larger problem for them moving forward. Just that's something that probably won't happen again. So that's probably good. That's kind of an outlier number, but even then, for being totally unable to force turnovers from this team that has gone now 3 years in a row with being very sloppy on the offensive end when they're operating at their best is a problem. And that's something they're really going to have to work on. I really felt like I took more away from the defensive end than the offensive end in this game, and the turnovers were kind of in charge of that. Really just felt like the Cavs were a little bit, you know, it was a little bit February Cavs in terms of the effort they were giving on the defensive end. Would you agree?
Well, I almost think like March Cavs after the second quarter. Like, I think it started off as like kind of half playoff Cavs in the first, and then kind of regressed to general apathy Cavs in the second quarter, and then once it was out of hand, it was just like, well, one guy's going to play hard on defense, and the rest of everyone else is going to kind of struggle. It wasn't maybe quite as just disastrous as March, like, because March was just, you know, a literal dumpster fire of Cavs basketball. It's maybe the worst they've played, you know, in the past 3 years, and that's kind of saying something considering how bad they were at the start of 2014-15, but... like, you were tweeting about Deron Williams playing good defense, and I was like, well, he actually is. But it's also some of the stuff Golden State did, I thought they, as much as I think the Cavs, like, could have been better in defense and could have done stuff better, like, Kevin Love in times in this game, you know, he started out really bad, but, you know, kind of ends up having a solid game because he's actually trying to block shots. That was, like, a really good thing where he was actually, like, kind of resisting guys at the rim. Kyrie, to me, like, what Golden State did was they did a really good job of attacking mismatches in a way the Cavs normally do. Like, them doing that little pick and roll to get Durant onto Kyrie is really, really smart, because it puts the Cavs in this position where Kyrie either has to foul, which you can't really do because you need Kyrie, or you're giving Durant a clean look from the elbow in. Like, and that's money for Kevin Durant when he's a 7-footer shooting over a Kyrie. Like, I think Golden State did a really good job of that, and I think at a certain point, like, I don't want to say the Cavs just, like, quit, but I think, like, they get up. I think that, for me, the breaking point of this game is that point in the third. The Cavs get it down to 12, and it's 3:07 to go. Like, you know, they had this really nice run, and then, by 1:28 of that quarter, the Warriors are back up 22. Like, it was just this 10-point swing, like, in a little over, like, a minute and a half, and then it just felt over to me there. That's where I was like, okay, this is done, and then it was sort of like the culmination of just the Cavs getting beat in the ways that you're describing that I think ultimately kind of doomed them.
Yeah, I mean, in that third quarter, the transition defense we kind of knew was going to come in and be a problem, and the offensive sloppiness kind of fed into that a lot. You know, constantly having turnovers constantly leads to these transition looks, which constantly leads to Durant going one-on-one or sometimes one-on-zero against someone, and that just kind of fed the momentum of this entire game. So that definitely was a problem. Back to one of the things that I noticed particularly on the defensive end for the Cavs that was a big problem, was you noticed a lot that the Warriors were able to put Tristan out on the perimeter, and the help wasn't really that good tonight. And I noticed a lot when the Cavs would be defending drives, particularly this was a J.R. Smith thing, but this is, you know, a long-standing Kyrie issue, so it wasn't as prominent because he's always doing it. But you notice that, you know, Steph would drive and the Cavs would do a pretty good job of kind of pushing them where the help was supposed to be. And then once they got to that point, they would kind of back off, and then the help just wasn't there. And player suddenly has a free reign to the rim. I noticed like five or six times in the first half, Kyrie or JR guarding Steph. Steph runs off of a high screen. They do a good job of fighting around the screen. They contain the initial penetration, And then there's a blown assignment either from Love or James or Tristan Thompson, who was just, we're going back to like 2012, 2013, Tristan Thompson tonight. I don't know where that came from, but
yeah, we need to talk about him, because him having a game like this is like not like, you can't, like, there's a lot of things that in this game to me that like the Cavs can't have happen if they want to win. Like him having four rebounds and just kind of not being that impactful is probably number one or number two in my list.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that, like, plus minus for single game never really matters, but for him it kind of does matter because he's always, like, an outlier there, and him being kind of in the middle of the pack with the rest of the team, that's a problem in and of itself because, you know, if he had, you know, one of these 0.4 rebound nights where it's like, okay, he wasn't really that involved, he wasn't involved on the glass, but Love was... Like, you can kind of understand that, but being that that minus 13 for him and the plus minus kind of feeds in how bad he was. But, yeah, I mean, particularly, like, just blown assignments left and right on the rotations. When the Warriors were moving the ball, there would always be kind of one rotation, usually like Richard Jefferson, Smith, Shumpert, Deron Williams would be able to make kind of that initial rotation to help, and then usually, honestly, it was LeBron. They would make that second pass, and then LeBron just wasn't there to make that second rotation, and suddenly it's a Durant wide open three. That was just the textbook Warriors offense tonight. Just generating a ton of open looks, really, because the Cavs were quite apathetic on the help defense and the rotation defense. And a lot of that comes down to, as we've talked about time and again throughout the course of this season with the Cavs defense, a lot of that comes down to LeBron's effort, and it just wasn't there tonight.
Yeah, there was the point where, like, LeBron, you know, they had him guard KD, and he literally, like, lost track of KD on the backside of a play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not...
That first backdoor cut dunk, mm-hmm. when it was... Which was just, that was one of the worst defensive possessions I've seen LeBron play this year, and that's a list.
you could do a BuzzFeed like listicle, you know, or like a quiz of like what bad defensive LeBron play are you? If you really wanted to this year, you probably could do that, because mm-hmm. there's just like a lot of general apathy of like LeBron plays, but like that shouldn't happen in Game One of the Finals, and I'm not gonna say that like it's gonna happen the rest of the series. And like, I actually don't think this, like, it's not the perfect comp, because nothing, like, comps are perfect, but, like, the way the Cavs lost in this game, like, aside from Steph playing really well, because Steph was bad in game one last year, he played badly, and, I mean, he was hurt last year, and you can tell he's healthier this year, and kind of more, kind of, like, angry, you know, like, with a little edge to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, LeBron's effort level's not that dissimilar. I don't know what it is. But he's, like, not, like, a ever, like, great in game one, it feels like.
Yeah, he definitely is one of those guys that is in the bar fight and needs to get punched in the mouth before he can really get going. That's kind of been his MO for the past, you know, 4 years, basically, is that, you know, even whether it's regular season, start of the playoffs to end of the playoffs, or even the beginning of the finals, like, he needs that adversity. He thrives off of adversity, which, you know, is kind of hard to generate when you're the best player in the world. So, you know, that's why the Cavs end up in these situations, is he kind of needs that a little bit to get going, which is why I'm less worried about the way that the rest of the series is going to go. Just because, you know, we've seen this movie too many times. We've seen LeBron get embarrassed and get blown out and, you know, things look really bad for him and his team, even in these high pressure situations. And there's always a response. There's always some sort of response, usually from him, but from his team in general. And I tweeted this out middle of the third quarter, when it got up to 20 points, it was like, yeah, people were starting to do the dumb, oh, there was a game one blowout, so naturally this means that the entire series is going to be a sweep, because we don't have enough evidence yet that's simply not true. You know, so you look back to last year, game two, they lose 110-77 or whatever, and they come back game three, blow the Warriors out by 20 points. Like, there's going to be a response. Whether it comes in game two, game three, that kind of remains to be seen. But, you know, it's the same thing that we've seen time and again with LeBron. Okay, now he's got his adversity. He's down 1-0. He can make his big pitch to the media that's kind of, you know, it's almost a little bit Nick Saban-esque at Alabama, or with Alabama football, where it's like they need to find some way to generate some kind of adversity, even though they're one of the best two teams in the league. And now they've got it. They lost by 22 points, and it was never competitive past the midway point through the second quarter. So there better be some kind of response. And, you know, I trust that LeBron's going to be able to bring it, because he has it every other point throughout the rest of his career.
Yeah, and, like, there's going to be a point where he can't. But, like, I don't really think the evidence that we've seen this playoff run, this season, where he's, like, playing, like, it's not yet.
Playoffs.
Yeah, so like sans game three. Yeah, it's like sans game three of the Boston series. Like, he's been the best player in the playoffs. And I don't think that's like a particularly hot take. I want to just quote that's coming through on the good old Twitter real quick. This is shouts to Matt Moore for putting this out. He has LeBron. What stood out? Someone asked LeBron that, and LeBron said KD. Like, that was his answer. His whole answer.
Uh huh.
Like, I mean,
but, I would agree with that.
But, like, okay,
you know, he was great, and the Cavs really have a problem with him because they don't have anyone that can match up with him.
You're telling me, you know, Kevin Durant's harder to defend than Harrison Barnes?
Just a tad. he's definitely harder to defend than Jay Crowder, I can tell you that much. But, yeah, like, there's just not – that's kind of, I think, the big problem for them moving forward is there is not a natural matchup for Kevin Durant, which there's not a natural matchup for Kevin Durant on 29 rosters in the league, save for Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, it's like Kawhi. Like if you want to have, like, someone defend KD, it's like there's probably, like, five guys you would trust to do it, you know, if they could, like, focus all of their energy in a game. Then it's like Kawhi, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, and LeBron, and, like, maybe, like, a Peaky Giannis, you know? Like, it's just, like, a very small number of guys.
Yeah, and I mean, even with LeBron, yeah, he can keep Kevin Durant from the rim. He can chase him around screens, but at the end of the day, Kevin Durant gets the ball 18 feet from the basket. It's an isolated play. Durant rises for a jumper. It's a physics problem.
He's
like,
seven
Durant
feet tall.
Yeah, he's got 3 inches on LeBron. He's probably got an inch on the wingspan. Like, that shot's – he's never going to affect that shot.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big issue for me kind of moving forward is, like, if the Warriors are able to run their offense through Durant and he's able to pass as well as he was.
Yeah, eight assists for him in this game, no turnovers.
Yeah, because you can take the Warriors out of their offense by looking or by trying to generate Durant ISO looks, and he will kind of get lulled into that. He did not in this game. He was looking to make that extra pass, mostly because it was there, because the Cavs couldn't make a rotation to save their lives. But he was very good at finding the open man and generally kind of looking to both attack on his own and get his teammates involved if it was the right play. He did a very good job at kind of diagnosing the way that the Cavs were defending him and made them pay. Whether that continues throughout the entire series remains to be seen, because we have seen Durant kind of run into that stagnation problem time and again in the past, even in these playoffs. But I mean, if game one is the way that the rest of the series goes for Durant, this is going to be a sweep, because there's no answer physically for the Cavs defensively for him.
Yeah. And I should, like, I don't really think, like, if an ideal world LeBron's defending Durant. Like, I kind of thought that coming in. I think that even more now. Like, I just don't think LeBron defending him is, like, the exact optimal use of LeBron. It's very telling, you know, that the Cavs did all these defensive changes coming into the series. and you're not really seeing any of them in this game. You know, like none of the hard trapping, none of the blitzing. Like, it's pretty straight up defense. You know, it's not anything that we saw them use against Boston or saw them use against Indiana. Like, it's very telling of like what they're going against. It's just like you add that secondary creator to what they were doing, and it becomes a lot harder to justify throwing traps and blitzing guys that get the ball at the top of the key.
Yeah, I mean, to point for the Cavs, this is what worked for them last year, and mm-hmm. this is what works against the Warriors. I do think that's kind of a good thing, because they didn't throw their entire strategy at the Warriors in game one. They're going to kind of, I think, feed that slowly as the series goes on. If they're able to kind of generate some effective play in game two, I think that they're going to be able to kind of build on that. They're a team that definitely, regardless of the situation, likes to kind of attack things at their base level, at the start of the series, and they like to build on that and kind of adjust as things go on. So I mean, we may see a lot of that stuff as we go, and they may cause a lot of issues for the Warriors later, kind of down the line, by doing some of those things. So I'm not totally sold that this is kind of the effort level, and we're not going to see any adjustments, because we've seen Tyronn Lue's a pretty good adjusting coach. I think that kind of they know they have a coaching advantage in this series, because Steve Kerr's not on the bench. And I think that they're gonna kind of feed some of those adjustments in, because they know from past experience in the past two finals that Golden State struggles to adjust when you can take them out of their game. So I think that, you know, that may be a thing to look for as we head into game two, is how much do the Cavs try to go to kind of their pet ways to defend the Warriors and attack the Warriors, and how are the Warriors able to respond? Because they did that same thing last year, got blown out in game two, started making all of those changes and kind of reverted back to 2015, and then Golden State really didn't have a good answer.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all spot on there. Let's look at a couple other things here, Trevor. I kind of think too, like, what did you make of Kevin Love's game? Because I really liked parts of it, and then I really didn't like other parts of it. Like, there's things I was like, oh, like, that guy, I think he's very playable now. Like, this is, like, kind of maybe a best-case scenario in some ways, but him struggling from inside the arc is kind of not gonna be sustainable, I think. Like, he has to, I think, do better than 4-13 from the field and only making one of his seven shots from inside the three-point line if he's going to maximize his impact and give the Cavs their best chance of winning a game by, you know, something that isn't a Kyrie Irving game winner.
Yeah, Kev's got to make that matchup pay against Klay Thompson.
Like, the way Golden State came out and it was like bumping him and letting Klay just kind of like be physical with him, and that was like their game plan with him. Very telling for what they did to the Cavs, and maybe I kind of think maybe that threw off the Cavs just a little bit.
Yeah, I just think that, like, they're gonna allow those switches to occur underneath the basket, and Love's gonna get a guard on him in the post. If the shot's not falling, which it clearly wasn't in this game, I mean, we knew that from the first two times this happened. Somebody's got a mismatch in the opposite direction. Like, that was the thing, is like those plays ended up with Zaza and Tristan, and then I think Draymond ended up like guarding J.R. Smith. Like, look for J.R. He just didn't really have the awareness. He was too focused on attacking the mismatch, which, to Klay Thompson's credit, he did not do much good in this game. He did a very good job defensively.
Yes.
Throughout the entire contest. He did a really good job on the perimeter. He did a really good job on these switches to Kevin Love. And I just think that, you know, he was too focused on trying to beat the mismatch as opposed to, you know, kind of settling down, operating at his comfort level. And, you know, he wasn't even looking for other options, which that's got to change. Because if the Warriors are going to switch everything, the Cavs have beaten the Warriors in the past by making them pay for switching everything. And they did not do a good job in this game. Love was the most particular egregious example of that. But yeah, they just did not, or he just did not really take advantage of that. I did feel like he did a pretty good job defensively, especially early on in the game. Obviously there are situations the Warriors can put him in where there's just nothing he's going to be able to do, but he was pretty solid. On the defensive glass, made some very good plays at the rim, particularly again against Klay Thompson, who just could not do anything within 10 feet of the basket tonight. But yeah, I think that if he's not able to take advantage of the switches that he's giving, or that the Warriors are going to give him in both directions, they're just, you got to put Channing Frye in, because Fry, for whatever he's not going to give you on the defensive end, he makes those plays.
I kind of think you might see Channing Frye in game two. I kind of wonder, you know, if you see him and Love or him and Thompson together. Because,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't think
they can put him and Thompson together. I just don't think that. I think you're giving it up too much on one end and too much on the other end, by having both those guys out there, especially if Thompson's going to play that way on the defensive end, which he won't. But yeah, I think that that's going to be a little bit of an issue. I honestly think that the way that they need to use Frye, if they're going to use him, is they need to put him in. They need to put him in kind of those LeBron and bench unit lineups and have Love come in with those, so that you've got Love and Frye playing together, and then LeBron and two of the guards, because then you can generate kind of that five out look that had a little bit of success in the late first quarter when they went to Richard Jefferson the first time. And I think that might be the way to optimally use that. Granted, that calculus changes if Tristan's going to look like 2015, 2016 Tristan, but that's an idea that you might see. Side note, that's a good segue. Richard Jefferson, he's done, right? Like, we're not going to see him again.
I think you'll see him again, but he was not good. Like, he was very not good. Got torched on every single defensive position he was put in.
It was a very Varejao performance from Richard Jefferson.
that's straight up the cruelest thing you've ever said.
that's what it looked like. He was so... It was like his age was so exposed.
when you bring up the Varejao... you know, like, that's doom. Like, that's, like, Richard Jefferson needs to just, like, probably just go play beach volleyball for fun. You know, like, this is probably it for him anyway, I kind of feel like. You know, even though he signed that 2-year deal, it makes me think you'll see Derek Williams next year. And I swear to God, if I get one more tweet about Derek Williams playing, I'm gonna, like, throw my phone.
Because, yeah, like, pretty solid 0.2 turnover, 3 foul, -9 plus minus game from Derek Williams in 19 minutes tonight.
Yeah.
Mostly garbage time, mind you.
Yeah.
So, even worse.
Yeah. But just, like, let's not, you know, do that. You know, the 4 minutes, like, just let's not. But, yeah, I think you do see RJ, but I think maybe, like, you have to play more Shump. You know, like, just kind of roll with Shump because Shump's better. Yeah. As much as Golden State's going to let him shoot, like, he's going to be better defensively. Korver, I wonder, too, like, I feel like I would rather play Korver if I was the Cavs than RJ at this point because of the shooting. And but it is a little weird that we haven't had, like, Korver. I feel like he should be, like, sticking the threes he got tonight.
Yeah, he had a lot of open looks, and I think a lot of that was just kind of first, like, this was the first time with this moment for Korver. He's basic. I mean, basically the only guy in this series that you can say that about. But that was really what I noticed, is when he got three pretty open looks on those three threes, and he just rushed a shot. Particularly that end of quarter one in the first half. When he kind of got that final possession, his feet just weren't set. That's just crazy to say about.
That's been a thing with him, though. That's kind of been a normal case, I think. Like, his feet are not always quite as set as they might have been, like in his peak Atlanta. Like, that's something I noticed in the Boston series. He's very just kind of wanting to shoot and go now, and I think what he's asked to do is different, and I wonder if that impacts his footwork at all.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but also, I mean, the mechanics were just not there tonight, and I think a lot of that, like, from top to bottom, they just weren't there, and I think a lot of that's just, you know, it's his first game in the finals, and he was a little bit nervous, and he rushed his shot a little bit. Mm-hmm. Whether that gets better throughout the rest of the series, we'll see, but I definitely think, you know, I'm more forgiving for Korver's struggles tonight than I am for Jefferson's and I am for Tristan Thompson's, just because, you know, his are a little bit more explainable than, you know, Jefferson just suddenly looking very old after actually looking pretty good in the Boston series, and then Tristan just, you know, totally no showing.
Yeah. Do you have any take on Kyrie's night?
It was pretty good. I don't really feel like I had any complaints about him, because I mean, you know, defensively wasn't great, but the rest of the team wasn't great. So
I thought he was like working at least, you know, like that's all That's all I really need.
It's literally the least you can ask with him. I thought that he was at times the only one who was attacking assertively.
His two finishes on Draymond, incredible.
Yeah.
Like, just, like people that, like, don't think Kyrie's good, like, I would just like to show them those on loop, because that's so hard to do on freaking Draymond Green.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the amount of body control that takes, it's nuts.
Yeah, I felt like he fell off with the rest of the team late in the quarter, but, you know, he was probably the Cavs' most consistent player tonight. I think that, you know, we'll continue to see him have pretty good games throughout the rest of the series. I didn't have an issue really with anything that he had going on. He was doing the best with what the situation allowed him to do.
Yeah, I think he has to kind of have like a 15-22 game in order to have the Cavs win, but, you know, I think like LeBron can have 8 turnovers and go 9-20 from the field, you know.
Yeah, it's got to be one or the other.
I think they both. It's neither, honestly. You know, you mentioned Channing Frye, but like as we look ahead to Game 2, what adjustments do you make if you're the Cavs? Like, I mean, I think the Love thing is a big thing. I think he's gonna have to, this is maybe his best performance against the Warriors. You know, like it might be. But there's clear room for him to improve. LeBron, I think, has to be better, obviously. But, like, and Tristan has to be better. But, like, are there any other adjustments you would make going into Game 2?
I think the big things I would do would be a little bit less Richard Jefferson. And hopefully that kind of solves itself by, you know, you're able to play Tristan Thompson a little bit more. I think that you've got to start trapping. You've got to start being a little bit more aggressive on the defensive end. If you're gonna give up these open shots, at least make it because you made an aggressive mistake. That would certainly be ideal. I think that they've got to do a little bit better job of just recognizing cuts or cutting opportunities and off ball movement on the offensive end, and then just being a little bit more sure moving the ball, just because the hesitancy with the passing tonight from everybody was just really obvious. And I think that now, you know, they can play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, which honestly, you know,
has made them play a little bit more calm in the past. And I think that we're going to see a more calm, collected offensive game from the Cavs in game two. It's all just kind of whether the defense shows any improvement whatsoever is going to be kind of the deciding factor for me.
Yeah, I think the thing I would kind of look for is you don't want to play Golden State's frenetic pace. I think Golden State had their best moments when the game was very hectic. I mean, it's a team that improvises quite a bit. They kind of set these screens that aren't exactly planned, and they just kind of roll with it, and that's what they do. The Cavs are sort of the opposite. They are sort of a more, like, let's kind of set up and then, like, go full head of steam. I think you have to kind of do more of that. I think it was very telling that when they made that run in the third before Golden State put the final clamps on the game, it was the Kyrie and kind of the simple stuff. I think, too, I think you're right about the defensive stuff, but I do, and I just think, like, the turnovers, like, it's so simple to say we've hit it over the head already, but, like, 20 turnovers against Golden State is doom. It is basically guaranteeing, giving them all these free chances at points. Like, you're not going to beat them if that happens. Like, they're just not a way you beat Golden State if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't really want to see Kyrie and Deron Williams play together in the next game. Like, I don't like that pairing in general. And I don't really... I guess if it's, like, Sean Livingston and Ian Clark, like, whatever. But, like, if Curry's on the floor and or Klay Thompson, like, you're just asking to get your backcourt shredded on defense.
Yeah, I mean, if that's going to be the case, I kind of think that the way that you best do that is you've kind of got to play JR at the three, LeBron at the four, and Tristan at the five if that lineup's going to work. Like, that's the only combination that I think that those two playing together does anything, because then you've got one player who maybe could be locked in on the perimeter in JR. You've got shooters kind of around these two. And then, you've got Tristan as kind of a fallback option, because, I felt like Williams had a decent defensive game, but offensively he just, he struggled to find a role, really, because they were guarding him a little bit closer than what we've seen throughout the rest of the Eastern Conference Finals when he was off ball and Kyrie or LeBron had the ball. They kind of clung to him a little bit more, and when he can't get open off ball to make kind of those cuts towards the rim or be able to get those above the break outlet threes, like, there's no role for him in the offense if he's not touching the ball.
Yeah, if he's not, like, creating, there's not really a point. I'm curious to see what they do. Lou is a good adjustment coach. LeBron's typically going to bounce back for something, and we'll see what that gets them. But this was not at all, I think, not quite the worst-case scenario, but, like, I think Golden State also has just room to improve. And if you're the Cavs, like, I think you kind of leave this game having to feel very frustrated about where you're at right now, and I don't think tonight makes you feel particularly good about your chances. You knew it was going to be tough, but to kind of lose this way and to have, Clay not shoot well and Green not shoot well, and I think you, for the Cavs, that you kind of know that game two kind of, I think game two has to be a game you come out and are very willing to kind of smack Golden State back a little bit in the proverbial sense and kind of put them back on their heels in a way they really weren't after the first quarter.
Yeah, I mean, if I think that they can lose game two and they can still have a shot at the series.
3-1 happened. Anything is possible.
Yeah. But I mean, if they come out, they make a few adjustments and they still lose by 15, I think it's over. Like, I think it's going to be probably sweep or in five. Just because, I think you're right. There are ways that Golden State can improve. They won't have four turnovers again, but they also won't have Klay Thompson shooting 3 of 16 from the field. They won't have 14 offensive rebounds with double digits in the first half, but they also won't end up with Zaza, Draymond, and JaVale McGee combining for 5 fouls in the first quarter. I definitely think that they've got to make some significant headway in the strategy department in order to kind of cut down the deficit. If they can lose game two by like 5, I think they can come away with kind of some ways to shift the series back in Cleveland. But you know, if they can't get things going when Durant's not going supernova and Steph Curry's not doing, you know, prototypical Steph Curry things, you know, the off the dribble threes and all the transition stuff that happened in the third quarter, like if that happens again, this is definitely over.
Yeah. Are you ready for NBA champion JaVale McGee? I'm not. I've never been ready for that, though.
I am more ready for that than NBA champion Matt Barnes, which I think has already happened.
Yeah.
Was he on that Lakers team?
I don't know.
Anyway, like that I think is the one that's the worst. Matt Barnes might play 2 minutes in this entire series. He got 2 minutes tonight, and
he had a three. He had a three in this game.
Yeah, and he might win a ring because of it, and that definitely makes me more uncomfortable than JaVale McGee just being asked to come in and block shots and doing so.
He played well in his 6 minutes, and that like kind of surprised me.
Yeah, it was a really good 6 minutes.
Yeah.
It was also a very good 14 minutes for Zaza Pachulia, and I don't think we're getting that again.
No, dude, he hit 2 jug shots, and I was just like, okay, like if Zaza's hitting these shots, like this is a wrap.
Yeah, he had those 2 shots. He had that really good offensive rebound on like the third possession where they kind of ground the shot clock to dust, and then he pulled that rebound out of Tristan's hands. Like just absolute peak Zaza in every direction in the first quarter. So that worries me a little bit too, because I think that kind of was the reason that Tristan ended up having such a bad night, was just he lost that matchup for the first 6 minutes and never really recovered.
When Curry got that offensive rebound over like LeBron and Tristan too, I was like, okay, like this is not the Cavs' night, because like that's just something they should be cleaning up, you know, like that's something Tristan normally has his hands all over.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be tough. Game two will be interesting. We'll see how they react. But Trevor, we're glad to have you back on, and we'll have to get you on again. And you know, I'm sure you're also in draft mode too. Like, I'm sure you're. What is more interesting to you, the draft or the finals?
I'm kind of, the finals came at the right time, because I'm kind of getting petered out on, you know, the rest of NBA Twitter kind of joining the draft conversation and the takes that come from that. You know, De'Aaron Fox going to be a top 3 pick. Going to be awesome. But yeah, I think that you know, this came at the perfect time. So I'll say the finals. But you know, I just have to segue our boys in a little bit dire straits. You want to talk a little? We just got to make sure that we talk this.
We got a Chetty update.
Yeah, Chetty update. Chetty is down 2-0 in the Turkish League. I believe it's semifinals. I believe they're playing Beşiktaş, and things are not going well for our friends Anadolu Efes. So you know, Osman may be wrapping up his final season in Turkey. I believe they lost today in a very, very not competitive blowout loss. So yeah, keep an eyes there as well. Just you know, I'll tip my hand when it's time for David Griffin to start negotiating with him, which is probably going
to
be
David Griffin has to do his own negotiating.
That's true.
It could be like Kobe Altman, you know,
yeah.
Like that could be a thing. Man, interesting time to be around covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. That was your Chetty Osman minute, Trevor. Thanks so much for popping on the pod, man.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So game one, Cavs lose 113-91. We'll be back. Have a bonus show up on Saturday with a mailbag. We'll run through some stuff for Game 2, and we'll talk then. I'll have a recap of Game 2 on Monday. Have a great Friday. Don't let this loss get you too down. It should still be an interesting finals. And as Trevor kind of reminded, the thing is still out there. David Griffin's contract's still out there. Never a boring time with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll talk again soon.
Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.